From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters. As a triple-demic of respiratory illnesses takes hold, some pharmacies here in the United States are placing limits on the number of over-the-counter medicines that customers can purchase to help with their symptoms. In particular, this is hitting children's pain relief medication. Spikes in cases of the flu, RSV, and COVID-19 led to a 65% increase in the sales of pediatric pain and fever relievers in the month of November compared to last November. This is according to the Consumer Healthcare Products Association. So joining us today to talk more about this is Dr. David Pate, the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Now remember, if you have questions, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So, Dr. Pate, can we talk a little bit about this shortage that we're seeing? I guess maybe not even a shortage, but the fact that there are limits being placed on some pediatric medications, pain reducers and things like that. But also, if you walk into a lot of stores here in the Treasure Valley right now, you're going to be hard-pressed to find these medications.
Yes, it is both, Gemma. There is a shortage, and that shortage is driven by the fact that the illnesses, the respiratory illnesses in children right now that we've talked about before, between COVID, influenza, RSV, and then there's a bunch of other viruses that most people haven't even heard of that are also circulating, we're seeing unprecedented demand for these pain relievers, fever reducers, and just kind of symptomatic treatment. Part of this was made worse for those of us in the northern part of the United States because Canada started going through this very thing. And I warned about this about a month ago that we needed to get ready because Canadians couldn't find medicines in Canada grocery stores and pharmacies. So they were coming down to some of the northern states to buy it. And it was just a warning to us. And in fact, now we're experiencing a lot of shortages of these medicines. One tip for our listeners is that while many stores, first of all, you may go in and just like you said, there may be empty shelves. But for those that do have it, they are typically putting on limits of how much you can buy. I will tell you that a trick is to see about ordering some of these online because they tend not to have restrictions for the online orders. With that said, of course, please be respectful and don't order, two cases of this stuff. You know, let others have it, but you can probably get it online. And I would stock up a little bit just to have these because chances are if you've got kids at home, somebody's going to be sick if they're not already sick.
And Dr. Pate, what about for maybe these kind of older kids who are on the cusp of being able to maybe take an adult dosage versus a pediatric dosage? If we're seeing shortages, maybe a call to your pediatrician, because I know I have an 11-year-old and because of his weight, we can kind of play around with that dosage if we needed to.
That's right. For some medications, it really is an issue of what their chronologic age is, but that's the minority. In most cases, it has a lot more to do with what is the typical body weight at that point, because you don't want to give too high of a dose for what their body size is. But I think your advice is a very good one, is go ahead and check now for a couple of things. First of all, check now to see if you can get some medication so that you have it instead of having to go looking when your child is sick. Number two, check with your pediatrician or family physician or whoever you're getting your regular care for and ask them, okay, what medications are safe for me to give my child for reducing fever, for cold symptoms, that kind of thing, so that you know what you can use and how much and what preparations you need, and you can go ahead and have that available.
And then the other thing that we're seeing, Dr. Pate, is potential crisis standards of care for for pediatric wings of hospitals or pediatric hospitals. I know we're seeing this around the country. And my understanding is that our hospitals here in the Treasure Valley are really keeping a close eye on that.
Well, you're right. And it is a tenuous balance. First of all, you remember when we talked a year ago about we had two times, one at the end of last year, 21, and one in the beginning of this year, where for the first time ever, our hospitals, some of our hospitals in Idaho, quite a bit of them, had to go on crisis standards of care, which was a first time in our history, let alone that we had to do it two different times. And that was primarily driven by adults. Our capability to flex for capacity surges for children is less than what it is for adults. Because as I learned a long time ago, children are not just little adults. They're a completely right. different species. And we, you know, the problem is there's limited number of pediatric experts in various fields that we might need. Just as we were just talking, the medications have to be different in many cases. The doses have to be different. So there are different issues in caring for children, and it's much harder for us to flex up. So we are much more vulnerable to being overwhelmed. And so if you take that we have an earlier RSV season than usual, and it's surging, we have a earlier than usual influenza season, and it's surging, and now we're seeing early signs that COVID is beginning to surge. You put all these together, and it's right before a holiday when even healthcare workers like to take some time off, or they may be getting sick, and you add all of this together, you have a recipe for disaster.
Okay, and the other thing I want to talk about, Dr. Pate, is this recent study that came out, and it was from it's a survey that was conducted by researchers from COVID States Project. This is a consortium of universities, and we should note they include Northwestern and Harvard and Rutgers. And what they did is they surveyed about 30,000 Americans, adults from all 50 states. And man, Dr. Pate, there were some, I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, some concerning findings. One being the very few adults who have gotten the bivalent COVID booster.
Yes. And actually, that I've been aware of this even before this study came out. This study confirms what we already knew. And that is, it is extremely concerning the low percentage of our population that's gotten the bivalent vaccine. So first of all, let me talk to all of your listeners. If you have not been boosted within the last 6 months, you must assume it is likely you have almost no protection against this virus. Number two is if you do get the bivalent vaccine, and you can get it today, if you get the bivalent vaccine, it, regardless of what your age is, it will drop your chances of ending up in the hospital or getting so sick that it's even an issue of whether you survive. It will cut down hospitalization and death rates by 50%. Now, is that as good as the original vaccines? No. Is that a vaccine problem? No. What it is, it's a function of the fact that we have let this virus go wild, and we have so many different variants now that have acquired the immune evasive capability to get around, whether you've been vaccinated or infected, by the way, to get. It's not working as well. But let me just ask you to put yourself back in the shoes you were in March or April or May of 2020, as we didn't have any option and we're waiting vaccines. If we had told you we had a vaccine that could decrease your chances of dying by 50%, everyone would have gotten it back then before we had all this disinformation. So it's still very helpful. Now, let me talk to the folks of my age and above for a minute. It's 50% for everybody else. It's 75% for you. That's huge. If you look at the people dying today of COVID, and we in the United States, we haven't even had our big surge that is now just starting. If you look at that group of people, 95% of those people did not get their bivalent vaccine. And most of these people are in our age group, over 65 and particularly over 75. And the other problem for people of our age group is we're not getting Paxlovid if we do get infected. And so 75% of us are not getting Paxlovid, even though I can tell you Paxlovid is the single best thing you can do if you're at higher risk because of age or underlying conditions to decrease the chance that you're going to end up getting severely ill from COVID. So keep in mind, if you're getting together with family, you're going to be having risk of getting exposed. You need to have the bivalent vaccine if you haven't done that. And second, if you do get sick, test. If you have influenza, we have antivirals for that. If you have COVID, we have Paxlovid for it, and get it. And a lot of doctors aren't prescribing it early because they're saying, well, you don't seem very sick. That's the wrong approach. We want to give this to you before you get very sick to prevent that. So you need to start Paxlovid within days of getting your symptoms. So please get tested and please push for. And if you're not getting the Paxlovid, try another doctor or another clinic, whatever. It will help keep you alive.
And before we go to break, the other thing I wanted to discuss in regards to this, the findings in this study, Dr. Pate, was it noted that only 28% of American adults have received their flu shot so far this year. But they also found that there's a strong correlation between getting the bivalent booster and getting your flu shot. With that said, it found that just 1 in 10 American adults have received both shots. I mean, I am quite surprised at how low those numbers are.
Yes, it's a combination of things. Some people don't understand the importance of getting vaccinated. Some people are being misled by other so-called experts or what they're hearing in certain channels. Let me tell you, this year, the match for what is circulating in influenza appears very good for our vaccine. This is a year you should get the flu vaccine. Even if you're not worried about yourself, number one, you could transmit flu to somebody else and it may be a problem. Number two, our hospitals are already being overwhelmed and influenza is one of the fastest rising reasons to be admitted to the hospital right now. So please get that vaccine. I spoke to a person just at the beginning of this week who called me, had 105 fever, and wanted to know what to do. I gave that person my advice. They went, they got tested, and sure enough, they had influenza A. The benefit, we have an antiviral that we could give this person, and I talked with them yesterday, and they're feeling better. So please get your flu shot, and if you get sick, get tested. Because if it's COVID, if it's influenza, or if it's group A strep, we've got treatments.
Dr. Pate, as we were talking in the last segment, Nancy wrote in and she said, I received my bivalent vaccine as soon as it became available in the fall. Do we know if there will be a booster for that after several months from now?
I wouldn't be surprised, but there is none recommended at this time. So if you get your bivalent booster, you're done for now. But I won't be surprised if we have some kind of an update next year. Plus, we also have some new types of vaccines that are being, they're in testing right now that offer perhaps some better promise of not even getting infected, which would be a big advantage. So stay tuned. I'm sure there'll be new things next year. But right now, if you've got your bivalent, you're good.
So Shelley wrote in, Dr. Pate, this is interesting. She said, we had a house full of people for a week at Thanksgiving. Almost all of them had been vaccinated for the flu this year. including the four members of my own family. Most of them came down with a really bad case of the flu while they were at my house, including my two children. My husband and I, who were caring for a lot of them, never got sick. Is there anything that we can assume about either my kids or the adults who did not get sick about their level of immunity for the rest of the flu season?
You know, it's really an interesting question. First of all, we know the flu vaccine historically is never perfect. So You certainly can get influenza even though you've been vaccinated for it. However, in almost all cases, it does mean whatever you get in terms of the flu is probably milder than had you not been vaccinated. As far as what might be going on this year, this is an interesting topic of debate among experts and particular immunologists. We see after COVID some immune dysfunction that we're not quite sure what the significance of that is yet, but it certainly is argued by some that if you've had COVID and perhaps as long as in the past 6 to 8 months, you may be more susceptible than you ordinarily would be to other viral infections. So that's a theory, that's not proof, but it may explain why some people in your gathering tended to do well, while others might have had a rougher go of it. And it would certainly be interesting, but not dispositive, to know had those people had COVID, particularly in the last few months.
Mm. So Dr. Pate, you recently wrote a blog piece about the holidays. And, you know, we just got through Thanksgiving. Christmas is coming up this week. Folks are traveling, they're gathering. So let's first talk about gathering and protections that folks should take, because I mean, we are dealing with the triple demic, but I mean, in particular, you know, the flu and COVID. So it's not just dealing with COVID this season.
Yeah. So there are a lot of risks this year, and I wish I'd had time to write this post earlier, but what I tried to do is to put together all in one place a lot of helpful links to other information and a lot of tips that come from being a doctor and studying this that you may not read other places. So I think there's a lot of good advice. It's, you know, we have to face it. If you're going to have a gathering, if you're going to be indoors, and let's face it, probably most of these gatherings are going to involve eating and drinking, which is pretty hard to do with the mask on, you're going to have risks. So I don't give you advice how to have a risk-free holiday. That's not possible. But I give you a lot of advice about things you can do to reduce the risks of having a gathering. And these include things like not only making sure that you have gotten your vaccines, but also things about how can you do things to adjust the air, ventilation, how could you monitor for that? How do you get tests? One frustration is that with these newer variants, you may not turn positive on a rapid antigen test as soon. And so it used to be more helpful than it is today, although it's still helpful in testing people before gathering. But I also point out that there's a new at-home PCR test, which we know turns positive sooner. And that can't be used for everybody, but it is another new option in trying to mitigate our risk.
Okay, so what about traveling over the holidays, Dr. Pate, and advice you would have for folks? Because I've read your blog piece, and the one thing that stuck out to me, and because we are going to be traveling a little bit later in the holiday break, is know kind of where to go if you might need like an urgent care or where's the nearest hospital. I mean, things like that. I mean, it seems, it seems simple, but, you know, good to know that maybe before you head out.
Well, it is. And, you know, what we talked about is that, when you're planning a family get together or a vacation, you know, you're excited, you're thinking about all the good things. And I want it to be good for everybody, but I also want you to think ahead, plan ahead, because a lot of the calls that I get from people are when they're in crisis. And now mm-hmm. what do we do? And especially when you're out of town, what hospital should I go to? Where can I go to get tested? Those kind of things. So I give you in that blog piece, I give you some of the links that I use to find out, okay, of course I'm in the business. So a lot of times, depending on where people are, I know what the best hospitals are there, but most people won't. And I give you some links of how can you try to figure out which are the better hospitals. Now, obviously, if you wait to the last minute, don't start reaching hospitals, just get to an emergency room and get to the closest one. But if you plan ahead, you can look at that kind of thing. I also tell you, be prepared ahead, look at and find out where are the pharmacies that might be available for testing if you get sick over the holidays. And you have to realize that a lot of doctor's offices are going to be closed. So look at those pharmacies and where you also might be able to start an antiviral if you need it. Look at urgent care centers in case you need to get checked. And remember that hospital emergency rooms now, by and large, are very backed up. And you may have a very protracted wait. In some parts of the country, we're hearing about people being 2 days before they can be evaluated if it's not a life-threatening emergency. So I give you some practical advice. Think about if you have to take somebody to the hospital, who's going to take care of your kids? If you have other kids, mm-hmm. you can't take them all to the hospital. Who's going to take care of your pets? What hospital are you going to go to? And if you're maybe going to be facing a couple day wait, take some medications, because believe it or not, a hospital can't give you medications until you've been evaluated by the doctor and the doctor orders them. So just a lot of practical things to make sure that you're prepared. My experience is whenever I'm prepared, then nothing happens. So I hope that is your experience as well. But if you're not prepared, that's certainly when you're going to have a problem.
You know, I have to tell you, Dr. Pate, before COVID, I might have taken like some Tylenol on a trip, right? Just thrown some in my bag. And now it's like, I've got the COVID test. I take Sudafed, right? I take all of these things just to make sure that honestly, if something were to happen, that we would have them with us, because we've been in situations since the pandemic started where certain medications, depending upon where you travel, even within the United States, are in short supply. So it might seem silly, but man, it's better to have it than be racing around trying to find it.
No, that is really good planning, Gemma. And you bring up a point that you're talking about for the United States, but if you're traveling internationally, it requires even more planning, because you're not going to know if you're going to another country, how would I get tested there? How would I get antivirals there? They may not even have the antivirals that we do. I also give people advice that there are some over-the-counter medications that we don't think twice about here, but are illegal in certain other countries in Asia or in Europe. And so it's things that you would be very surprised about that are over-the-counter antidiarrheal or over-the-counter allergy medicines that either the drug itself is illegal or a certain dose becomes illegal. So you need to plan ahead. Check with the U.S. Embassy there. Make sure that you can bring the medications you're bringing with you. Find out where you're going to be. Where would I go for a hospital? Where would I go for testing? You've got to be more prepared these days.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up with you, Dr. Pate, speaking of other countries, I want to talk about really quickly what you've been seeing in regards to increases in group A strep and scarlet fever in Europe. And are we starting to see this in the United States? But a new study is giving us maybe an explanation?
Yes, very surprising to me. As I said, for probably about a year now, we've been aware of some of the immune dysfunction that we see after COVID, but we would expect that's the part of the immune system that's much more involved with viruses. Group A strep is a bacteria, and I wasn't quite sure why would we be seeing a big uptick, and really big in UK, also impacting Ireland, France, Wales, a number of other countries. But as you said, It's been identified as an issue here in the United States. The Department of Health in Minnesota issued an alert about 2 weeks ago that they're seeing double the cases of invasive group A strep that they normally see. Now the CDC has said they're investigating that there may be a rise in invasive group A strep in the United States. So the study you referred to may provide the answers. And what it showed is that in people 1 to 3 months after COVID, when you looked at their lining of their nose and throat for our immune defenses, COVID wipes out or creates dysfunction in a certain type of white blood cell that is normally present there that is key in fighting off strep and some other bacteria. So this may be a clue as to what is going on. I think the take-home point, although this is still rare here in the United States, but I just saw a case of scarlet fever a week ago here in Boise. So wow. It's happening. I think that the key takeaways are if you have a child, especially a child that had COVID in the past several months, and now they appear sick, don't just assume that this is another virus or whatever, particularly if they're having high fever, if they're having a really sore throat, and particularly if they have a rash. Most of these other viruses that we're dealing right now, they can, but they don't quite often cause rashes, whereas group A strep can cause a rash. Often will start on their stomach or back, so look there, but it will spread to the other parts of it, and particularly to their face and arms and so forth, but also look at their tongue. If you look at the tongue, it's been described with a strawberry appearance. It's as if there's a little bit of a white coating on their tongue and little red bumps sticking up. If you see that, that is a sign associated with scarlet fever as well as the rash. Be sure to get in touch with your doctor because it's important. We have a treatment for it, but it's antibiotics. You got to get started on those right away and you got to complete it. And that antibiotic is also in short demand. It is in short supply because of the increased demand. So if your child's having symptoms, make sure you just get them checked and tested, because if you don't treat this, bad things can happen.
As always, Dr. Pate, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Gemma, and happy and safe holidays to everyone.
Remember, if you have questions for Dr. Pate, he will be back with us. So send us emails, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.